This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Lots of clouds in Chicagoland today. Another warm one with a high of 86 degrees. Right now, 77 O'Hare, 79 Midway, and 78 along the lakefront. But we're going to be back in the 90s throughout the rest of the week, and maybe even 100 degrees on Friday and Saturday. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll talk about bank stocks as some pretty good earnings have been rolling in. Also, the impact Amazon Prime Day has on other retailers. And Travel Tuesday, some mistakes to avoid when you're on that summer vacation. President Trump says the government's going to look into accusations that Google's work with China could constitute treason. We'll discuss that in our next segment. Right now, though, a very busy day of data. Let's break down the key information with the help of Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, let's begin with retail sales beating expectations in June.
Yes, we really have the consumer playing the atlas for the U.S. economy and carrying growth. And the upside surprise was due to, really, we have to thank the Fed. The Fed's pivot or pirouette on policy has already lowered mortgage rates quite substantially. We've seen the rally in the bond market and spillover effects to the mortgage market. Mortgage refinancing picked up back in March, and now those people have closed on that refinancing, have a little extra cash in their pocket, lower prices at the pump, and then you add on top of it, they now have more access to credit and using their credit cards more than they once were. This has gotten us in trouble in the past, but right now we're still at pretty low debt levels on the consumer side, and that is allowing consumers to kick it up a bit. What's interesting is where the strength was and where it wasn't. Extraordinary gains in online spending, up over a double-digit rate, almost 14% from a year ago. That is really that ongoing shift before Amazon Prime Day today. That is that online shift, that shift to online shopping. We also saw nice big ticket spending. We also saw gains in spending on things like discretionary, going out to the restaurant, lower prices at the pump have freed up some discretionary dollars and a little spending at bars too. So people were celebrating during the month. On the downside, those traditional department stores, that was the one real ugly outlier out there, in addition to gasoline station sales, which were down because of prices. But department stores continue, the traditional old line department stores continue to struggle. And that's why we're continuing to see store closures even as the consumer comes back.
And what are home builders thinking too? Home builder sentiment ticking up is slightly, but still up.
It certainly is up. That's good news. It has been a little rocky this year, and home builder sentiment sort of front-ran the market. We do know the West is where the most improvement was, is the one area of the country where supply shortages are the most acute, and they are trying to change zoning laws to open up some property for actual construction. There is a real sense of, not in my backyard, all these people who want more affordable housing, there's a lot of laws in California that prevent people from building behind them so they can lock in their property values. So that's an issue that they're struggling with, but they are starting to open up some properties out there, and that should help buoy it. We also have seen a shift from the hottest markets like San Francisco to secondary markets like Colorado and places like that, Denver. So you have had a real shift, and also second-tier markets are starting to attract some millennials as businesses actually locate there because they're more affordable than these super hot markets that have seen just skyrocketing housing prices.
Always good to get some good news and to hear you tell us about it. Thanks, Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Up in just moments, a billionaire tech investor claims Google has been infiltrated by the Chinese. President Trump says his administration is going to examine Google's relationship with China. It's being questioned by some leaders in the tech industry. To bring us up to date, Terrence Dopp is joining us, a reporter at Bloomberg News based in New York. Terry, thanks for being with us. So what's going on here? What's the accusation against Google?
Thank you. Well, today, President Trump said he wants Attorney General Barr to look into these allegations by Peter Thiel. Specifically, what Peter Thiel said during a speech over the weekend was that essentially Google is, you know, his quotes, seemingly treasonous. by going after international markets and overlooking U.S. interests.
Now, when we're talking about Google here, obviously you're talking about a global company. So there's probably a pretty delicate dance for Google because it wants to have a worldwide market, worldwide income and growth.
Well, yeah, that is sort of the business outlook. As you can imagine, Google hasn't been too effusive in the story so far. But they are saying that they do not work with the Chinese military, and they are, you know, these are not exactly allegations that, you know, they are going with.
So what is the danger for Google now that the president says he's going to have someone look into this? What sort of a risk is there? What might happen?
Well, I mean, as you can imagine, with any sort of an investigation of this character against a company, you know, there are a number of potential outcomes. I mean, we could be talking, you know, anything from, you know, some sort of administrative solution to, you know, potentially larger issues. I don't think anyone really knows, and I don't think there's any reason to believe or speculate on what the potential outcome is right now.
Now, when it comes to AI, it seems like that technology is just growing, changing, morphing, evolving. I mean, seemingly every day. It seems like that may be one of the challenges here that the government's pointing to, is if any of that AI technology is shared with the Chinese.
Correct. And that is there, another Alphabet subsidiary by the name of DeepMind. That is the technology and the firm that is really being singled out by Thiel. What he's saying is it needs to be treated as a, you know, as if it were a military weapon or potentially a military weapon.
Thanks so much for bringing us up today, Terry Dopp. That's Terrence Dopp, reporter, Bloomberg News, based in New York.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A report from the research firm SurveyMonkey finds one of three workers in the U.S. has considered quitting their job in the past quarter of the year. Let's find out more about the dissatisfaction from Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray & Christmas, based here in Chicago. So, Rick, what's going on? Why are so many workers dissatisfied?
Well, simplistically, they can be dissatisfied. They have the option. It's a positive economy. The majority of the people that are considering quitting or do quit tend to be in the higher employability part of the market. So that's the first part. So money's the elephant in the room. But I think really it's more about people feeling relevant. So, you know, I guess if you say, why do you quit, then ask them, why wouldn't they?
Now, is some of this maybe generational? I mean, is it younger workers who maybe want different things from the workplace?
Well, there's a couple of things that are happening here. So I would say, in general, that's true. You know, you have people who are highly marketable based on their backgrounds and in their industry. And so what's happened is the millennial, you say, under 30, 38 and under really is what we're talking about, which is a third of the workforce. They've come into the job in a different place than many of us did as boomers. They came in relevant immediately. It's sort of when you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. So you want to be relevant, you come in and you find out that as somebody that's 26 or 27, you are, and the expectations for that job are significant. At the same time, the organizations have flattened out their structure so much, there's far fewer opportunities to get guidance, mentor-mentee relationships, co-mentoring. So it's about performance at a high level much faster than probably those of us who came in 20 years ago had to deal with.
And is there this sort of desire for advancement, too, and mentoring and that sort of thing? I'm imagining you have a lot of bosses that were content with just doing the work, making the widgets, being there until retirement, without necessarily always thinking about that sort of kind of constant development and growth.
Well, I think what you have is you also have the younger part of the workforce has tremendous access to information and the facility to get it. They're far more aware of what's going on, and they've also seen what you might want to point to as the failure of their parents in terms of they didn't ever seem happy. And I would say that, and I don't want to make a broad brush statement, but I think in general, the entering workforce, They're more responsible to performance, and they've also seen more mistakes made, so they're a lot more skeptical about just stay there and do the work. They want to feel like they're part of something. And when the organization is much flatter, every single person there counts, and those people coming on board count more than they used to, for sure.
How important is it for employers to really consider those salaries, given, as you say, salary is top of mind, they still want more money, and because of the labor market, they can probably go get it somewhere else?
Sure. And I think that what you're looking at first and foremost for people is you have to identify your key employees and think about your retention strategy. And your retention strategy is not purely a money game, because somebody can always outbid you. So you're looking to make sure that those people are understood and heard and feel like they're part of it. And a lot of that has to do with the ability to learn and to do new things. I've heard it said that if you want to keep your talent, give them the tools to leave. And what that means is giving them more responsibility, not less, recognizing them and making more part of the organization, not basically babying them, but actually bringing them into the organization and getting them more involved, and finding ways to connect them that aren't necessarily pure money, because, as I said, there's always someone who can pay more than you can.
Well, it's good, too, to have a whole crop of employees that wants to keep growing and really being more valuable. Thank you. Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger, Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, avoiding some of the common mistakes made by travelers as you head out on that summer vacation.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Stocks are mixed. While America's big banks beat the street with their earnings reports, we'll focus on the financial sector. Travel Tuesday, there are some mistakes people often make when on a trip. We'll help you steer clear of them. Day two of Amazon's massive Prime event, we'll look at the strategies being employed by competing online retailers. The Humboldt Park Lagoon Alligator now in the hands of Chicago Animal Care and Control, and the U.S. House could vote later today on a resolution condemning President Trump for his tweets involving minority congresswomen. On Wall Street, the Dow down 1, NASDAQ down 21, the S&P is down 6. Oil is down almost 2.5% today, seeing some scattered rain showers moving through the area, heading to a high of 86 degrees. Right now, it is 77 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Three of America's major banks are out with earnings reports today, and they are quite impressive. Let's get the perspective of Dick Beauvais, financial strategist at Odeon Capital Group, based in Tampa. Dick, always good to have you on the show. Before we dig into each of these individually, in general, does this say something pretty good about the banking sector?
I wish it would, Cisco, but it actually doesn't, because what we're dealing with is a series of one-time events which are causing these earnings numbers to be so strong. For example, when you see interest rates go down across the board, since the banking industry in aggregate owns $3.5 trillion worth of securities, the value of all those securities go up, and that creates a significant one-time profit. When you see a lot of IPOs being done and that the value of these companies take off right after the IPO, the banks, you know, benefit because they have something called a green shoe, which allows them to issue 15% more shares and take the profit themselves. Plus, the banks have big investments in these companies before they go public. So you're seeing a big increase in profits from both of those sources. And then finally, for reasons which are relatively unclear, there have been huge tax rebates in the quarter. So if you wipe out, if you will, all of those developments which have all occurred together in this quarter, you know, the numbers are not that impressive.
And is that why, I mean, I noticed I've been looking at some of these stocks today, not seeing any sort of big jumps in most of these stocks?
Well, that's exactly correct. In other words, basically, if you take a look at, you know, the capital market sides of their business, you know, you're not seeing any increase really in investment banking or trading or advisory activity. You know, you're just not getting any kind of push in that area. And if you take a look at the loan portfolios, you know, they're up a little bit. I mean, so you're getting a modest improvement there, but not much. And if you take a look at the net interest margins, remember, interest rates are expected to go down, but they have not gone down. So the net interest margins should be up. They really weren't. So, you know, banks are producing on their recurring revenue streams, a moderate increase in earnings from operations, which has been expanded meaningfully as a result of all of these other developments that I mentioned.
Talk about the challenge in trading income, given the fact that it seems like there's more and more platforms offering free trades or really cheap trades, and obviously consumers are going to go where it's cheapest.
Yeah, no, you're making an extremely important point, and that is that the whole, think about it, we've had this, 10, 11-year bull market, right? And you would assume that when something like that happens, asset managers, brokerage companies would all benefit enormously from it. However, as a result of improvements in technology, we've created exchange-traded funds, and some $4.5 trillion has left the managed fund area for the exchange-traded fund area. So what we're seeing instead is salary cuts. People are being fired left and right across the industry. You're seeing a shrinkage in the number of asset managers. You're seeing a shrinkage in the number of brokerage firms. And this is happening in a bull market. But it's happening because technology is explosive in terms of its impact on the financial sector, and more specifically in the asset management area. People are buying exchange-traded funds, which makes a great deal of sense, as opposed to giving their money to asset managers and paying a relatively high fee and giving up liquidity. So in what should be really, really good times for asset managers, brokerage firms, it isn't.
Always good analysis. Thank you. Dick Beauvais, financial strategist, joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. Let's take a look at the markets today. They were slipping for a while. Now they're basically back to the flat line. Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at Smart Portfolios in San Diego. Jim, what are you seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, basically, as a follow-up to the financials, one of the things that I try to do, Cisco, is combine fundamental analysis with technical analysis. And to piggyback Dick Beauvais' comments, if one looks at the relative strength of the financials to the S&P, they've been weakening consistently since January of 2018. At that point in time, XLF was at $30 a share. It's now trading just above $28. So it's truly been dead money. And this is the type of analysis that I think sometimes investors need to do more of, because you hear a good fundamental story, but you got to make sure that the price action is actually conforming to that fundamental story.
Well, and that is sometimes what you'll see, right, is people will get the news, hey, bank earnings doing well, and they'll go and jump into them, not realizing that there's more to it than that.
Absolutely, and that's why I think looking at technical analysis and being able to follow trends and momentum should be a key component of everybody's analysis. Unfortunately, 90% of the effort is spent just on fundamental analysis, and this is a case story where adding that technical sleeve would have really helped people avoid this sector for most of the last 18 months.
Now, President Trump, let's talk about trade with China.
Yep.
He now says long way to go on trade with China. Can investors afford, because of all the back and forth day to day, to just sort of ignore this for a while until something happens, or can't you do that?
Well, my take is, A, I don't believe there's going to be a trade deal anytime soon. I think both sides have dug their heels in, and there's a great separation between what each party wants. Therefore, more pain before we get the gain. There's a chart pattern called the megaphone pattern in the S&P 500 dating back to the high in January 2018. Interesting, Cisco, it called for the S&P to reach 3,000. Obviously, we've done that. But the scary projection is that it also implies that the S&P has the potential to decline back to the December low. So I think we're at a point in time where the, investors have got a lot of good news. G20, everybody's going to start talking again. Good employment report. The Fed's going to cut rates, which is kind of unusual given the strength in the U.S. economy. This has all been wonderful. But yet, things like the Russell 2000, the transports, even though they're having a great day today, a number of the major averages, Cisco, are not in sync with the S&P and Dow, and that normally tells you that there's trouble lurking underneath the surface. So I think people should be really cautious right here.
That's Jim Welsh. You can find him online at his website, macrotides.com. We'll check the traffic and weather and Travel Tuesday just ahead. Proper planning for a more enjoyable on-budget vacation.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Hamilton County Tourism. This afternoon, we're looking at some common mistakes that travelers make that result in less fun and more cost. Think about this as you head out on summer vacation. We welcome Kathy Bernstein, family adventure specialist at Pro Travel International, based here in Chicago. Kathy, we're always, thinking that if we just wait to the last minute, maybe we'll get a deal on a flight. Is that the case? Is that a wise idea?
I really don't think it is anymore. There might have been a time when that was the case, but I think planning ahead makes a lot more sense. Flights are very often completely full these days. So if you wait till the last minute, you may not get a seat at all, much less a bargain.
So what is it? Okay, so you plan ahead of time. You get your airplane all set. What about the accommodations? What about the hotel?
Well, I think it's a good idea to do that ahead of time, too. It's no fun to get all the way there and not have any place to stay. So I definitely think you should do that ahead. More importantly, though, I really think the first thing that you need to do before you go, if you're headed out of the country, is to make sure that your passports are up to date and have 6 months validity after the end of your trip, because many countries now require that. And the wait to get passports at the moment is 6 to 8 weeks. So it's not anything to leave till the last minute.
And is that sometimes you find people just assume that somehow they can get it done in time, even if it is a week or two before they leave?
Well, you can do that as long as you've got about $700 or so to pay FedEx to get it done that quickly. But most people, you know, waiting for the last minute are not are kind of looking for bargains, not to spend an extra quick $700 like that. So I really think it's, and a lot of people don't seem to be aware that it needs to be valid for 6 months after the end of their trip. So you really do need to plan ahead on that.
Yeah, they might not know that it's not just that it has to be valid. It has to be valid for a while. What about when it comes to credit cards, debit cards, especially if you're going overseas or maybe even just a different part of the country? Do you need to check in with your bank about that? Is that still an issue?
I think it is still an issue. I tell my clients there are three basic things they need to think about before a trip, just kind of like you do when you get in and out of your car or go somewhere: keys, wallet, and phone. Wallet being, you know, check with your bank, check with your credit card companies, let them know where you're going, because the last thing you want to do is get to a foreign country, go to use your credit card and have it denied because they think it's a fraudulent charge because you haven't let them know. So that's the first thing you need to ask and then or tell them. And then the second is that you need to know if you've got foreign transaction fees on that card, because that's not a pleasant surprise to come home to. If you end up with an extra 3% on all your charges because you didn't know your card carried that fee. And then lastly, I'd check with your bank about your ATM card if you plan to use that, which I recommend in a lot of countries. Know if there are any fees for that and make sure you know what your code is, because if you don't know your code, you can't use your ATM anyway.
Very, very good advice. Thank you, Kathy Bernstein, family adventure specialist at Pro Travel International, joining us on Travel Tuesday, trying to make sure your summer vacation is pleasant. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, how competitors are dealing with Amazon's huge Prime Day promotion.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Amazon's annual Prime event wraps up today as the online giant's competitors work to make their own sales mark. We're joined by Jan Rogers-Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers-Niffen Worldwide in New York. Jan, it's not only Amazon that appears to be doing well these couple of days.
Well, yeah, we saw great numbers out of Walmart. We saw great numbers out of Target. Best Buy, they were all up about 60%. So it's been pretty great for most people. But Amazon was up, we think, more than 50%. So, yes, if you're a big player doing $1 billion a year or more, you're probably a winner. If you're a small player, you've probably lost market share.
Now, the consumers, obviously they're not stupid. So they see something on Amazon. If they head there for Prime Day, it's only natural that they're going to start looking around to see if they can get an even better deal on one of the other sites.
Well, sure, and that's one of the reasons we see them doing a lot of business on other sites as well. But I think the biggest thing is just people promoting it. You know, everybody has decided to jump in the game, and they're playing the game with Amazon, and they're saying, okay, Amazon created this holiday, but we're going to be there. And so big players made a lot of noise, sold a lot of product, and yes, most of it's pulled forward. It's not like it's incremental business, but if you pulled it forward and some other guy didn't play, you gained market share.
So in general, for retailers, especially those that have such an online presence, is it a good thing? I mean, at first it seemed like Amazon was the monster who was going to take up just about all of this on their own sort of retail holiday. But does it actually end up making things better for everyone as there's more traffic?
Well, you know, July is the second smallest retail month of the year, only January smaller. So anything you can do to make July bigger is probably a bonus, and sales that come sooner, if they're planned promotions, are normally more profitable than sales that come later and go on unplanned promotions. So my analysis is if you're Walmart or Target or Best Buy or Amazon, yes, it's better for you. If you're a small player that's losing market share because they've turned this into a holiday, it's probably not better for you.
Good insight, as always. Thank you, Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.